Hey, before we get going, I just want to tell you a little bit about our partner Medium's membership program. They have incredible writing on a great number of topics, but one of them is crypto. They've got stuff like the transcripts from this show. The first few are free, but then you need to become a member. And I can tell you, it's well worth it. $5 a month, $50 a year. It opens up a whole world of great writing. They have a lot of interesting plans, some of which they've told me about, some of which they probably have not told me about, but I highly recommend that you sign up today. Okay, here's the show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Wednesday, March 14th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,085.
A bang, back at you, Coin Talk. Kind of an unusual episode today. Bear with me, if you will. Jay and I decided that we were overdue. This is, of course, my co-host, Jay Kang. I'm Aaron Lammer. We decided that we were overdue for an episode about the blockchain. I don't know, is it the blockchain? Blockchain? Now you're getting a taste for how confusing this issue can be. I think we were both inspired a bit by a piece that Adrienne Jeffries published in The Verge, in which she interrogated some of the projects that are trying to slap a blockchain label on what they're doing, and also argued that a lot of the things that we think of as blockchains may not even be blockchains. So we wanted to start at the beginning and answer the question of what is a blockchain, and things rapidly went off the rails. So probably this is part one in a series of us trying to understand this topic, and we'll have on writers and technologists and people who understand it far better than we do. But if you like to see two people fumble around in the dark, you are in for a treat. We are brought to you, of course, in partnership with Medium. Thanks to Medium, all of the transcripts from the show can be found at medium.com/cointalk. Jay and I can be reached at hi@cointalk.show. Oh, if you'd like to sponsor the show, send us an email there and I can send you rates. Okay, here we go. Hey, what's going on?
Hey, you're still out in Berkeley, huh?
I'm flying back tomorrow, still in Berkeley, still lovely here, still looking at a very nice sunset.
So it's been about a week since we talked, maybe not actually, it's been about 4 days.
No, not even a week.
Since we talked last. How many crypto-related or blockchain-related t-shirts have you seen walking around the Bay Area?
At least a dozen.
Really?
I was in the Japantown Mall. Uh-huh. In San Francisco, the Japan Center yesterday, having some ramen with a friend from college, and he does not know or care about this topic at all. And I was sheepishly being like, yeah, I'm kind of hosting this cryptocurrency podcast, and I could see someone at the next table, like, ear prick up and like wanting to jump in, like he wanted to like switch tables with his girlfriend and come to our table.
Yeah, let me tell you, that does not happen here in New York, and I have seen zero cryptocurrency related t-shirts except the one I wore a couple days ago, which is the Roger Ver Bcash t-shirt that I sometimes wear to work.
I will say that in addition to the t-shirts, I feel like there's been a batch this week of articles by writers that I like outside of the crypto universe writing about cryptocurrencies, which is something I've always known was coming, but I am enjoying, like, I'm enjoying people whose voice I otherwise want to hear about different topics weighing in on this topic.
Yeah, it's sort of circled over finally to the I don't want to use the word pundit, because I feel like, at least for me, that's a pejorative term, because I respect these writers too. But I'll just say that people who think about big things out loud and write very well, and you know, you sort of trust their, you know, whatever their sort of vision of the universe is or whatever they've thought through, you trust that. So yeah, I mean, I noticed that as well. Like Paul Ford, who is somebody I think we're both a fan of. I think that
Paul Ford encapsulated this moment well. I think he tweeted this out. He was like, Bloomberg like asked me to like write something for them. And he was like, 276 pitches later, blockchain ? And they're like, that's the one we want. So I don't even know if this is actually enthusiasm on the part of these writers or it's enthusiasm on the part of their editors.
Hmm.
but I'm enjoying them doing the work so I don't have to. And I was actually hoping that we could maybe use one of those articles that came out this week as kind of a springboard to have the conversation that we've been putting off, where we try to understand what the blockchain itself is.
Yeah, so I mean, we discussed a little bit last week about what we were going to do for the show. And one thing that I think that we wanted to do when we launched the show, which was to give sort of a primer for people, or a primer. I don't know how one explains.
Really?
I say primer.
Wow, Jay,
but
all kinds of trends.
That's actually right. That's actually right. A primer for people who don't know what terms are, or trying to get into this crypto space. And I don't even think that doing an episode to explain blockchain is really something for noobs or for beginners only, because I think a lot of people who you sort of walk around and think that they know a lot about crypto, they might not really know blockchain either. And I think that for a long period included both you and me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in a lot of ways you can wrap your head around some weird alt currencies and still not really wrap your head around the blockchain. And I don't totally know that I've wrapped my head around it, but I generally gauge questions that normal people ask me as important. Like the question I'm getting a lot from like people I know's parents, like the grandparents of little kids who are running out around at these little kid birthday parties that I'm cursed with now, is this question of, but what do you think about that? Like blockchain is the real innovation and this Bitcoin thing's just a fad. That's like something I've heard from a lot of people.
Let me ask you a question then. Let's say I meet you at a kid birthday party and I'm like, hey, Aaron, I know that you have a Bitcoin podcast. I've heard a lot about blockchain. What is blockchain? What do you say?
Okay. So at its basic level, the blockchain is a ledger. Think of a blockchain as, you know, like the, like when an accountant, like in like a movie in the 1800s, takes down like that giant leather bound tome and starts like dipping their quill and writing on a line. That's a ledger. And if we're going to use the Bitcoin blockchain as an example, the Bitcoin blockchain is a ledger of every transaction made ever on the Bitcoin network.
Let's pretend that we're actually doing the role playing here. So like you have just said that to me. And I think the thing that I would say, I would sort of interrupt you and I would say, wait, there's a Bitcoin blockchain and there's another blockchain.
So all of those things are basically like an Excel spreadsheet would be a pretty good metaphor. It's a really long Excel spreadsheet that explains every time a transaction has happened that moves coins from one wallet to another wallet.
Okay, so what is the difference between that and what American Express does to keep track of all of my credit card and everyone who else has a credit card, which
sure,
is far more
sure.
people than use Bitcoin? Like, how is that any different than that ledger system?
Well, when you go and use your American Express card, say, to purchase NBA League Pass, real world example in my case. So it creates a bill in your credit account, and it sends money from American Express to the people behind NBA League Pass. And all of that is stored in, I would say, a fairly similar transaction, but that transaction is stored only on American Express's servers. And I don't have any access to those servers by design. American Express could make a mistake, etc. I just sort of have to trust that they are correctly keeping tabs on that.
I think that there's no two-sentence way to explain any of this, right? But Google has tried. And so before we even talk about blockchain, it is important for us to try and define it in some sort of way that like people can hold in their head. I don't think anything that you said is wrong, but I just feel like this is the problem that people always encounter. It's why people like Venkatesh Rao, who is a writer that we both like, Paul Ford, you know, I think that's why they're assigned things, or in Venkatesh, is, you know, takes it upon himself to write these things that try and use some sort of metaphoric way to explain the blockchain, because in itself, it is both a very simple thing to grasp, but it also has so many caveats and like, well, it's different in this sort of way that it becomes very vague. So here's Google's definition. I want you to respond to it.
Yeah. And this is from, just to credit, both of us really enjoyed this Adrian Jefferies article about the blockchain that was in The Verge. So shouts to Adrian Jefferies.
Okay. So here's Google's definition. Blockchain is a digital ledger in which transactions made in Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency are recorded chronologically and publicly. That's it.
That sounds about right. I mean, I think the part that is really important beyond that, I'm not sure it actually has to be digital, but let's say like that's kind of splitting hairs. Like, I still think it could be a blockchain if you somehow were able to like create a analog blockchain. But the part that's like really tough to wrap your head around is that public, like what public means. Does public just mean it's on a web page or you can see it? Or does it mean that there's some sort of a public consensus about it and that multiple people are hosting it concurrently and validating that there is data integrity across the multiple copies of it?
Yeah, and it, look, the one thing that the Google definition I think doesn't include that I think most people in the Bitcoin community would insist upon is that there is some sort of cryptographic protection in it, right? That it uses concepts of computer science, cryptology, to make sure that it's secure. The best metaphor I've heard is like, let's say that you do have that 1800s movie, like leather-bound ledger that the old man like takes down and writes in his pen, right? Like, imagine if you could just like, if there's like 12 of those or 500 of those or 500,000 of those, and every time he wrote in his pen, people who he did not know where they were or who they were, whatever he wrote would also appear in their books, you know, through some sort of Harry Potter magic or something like that. Like, that's kind of the idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost a little bit like, let's say there was a convention of the 1800 accountants every year. And everyone kept their own ledger. And then we would all, you know, get on our horses and come to Vienna. And we'd all copy down everything that was in everyone else's ledger, even transactions that we had actually had no part in. But by doing so, we would create 500 identical copies of the ledger distributed across all the other 1800 accountants in the Prussian Empire. And therefore, if Johann got into some funny
this
business,
is like borderline there would be 400 Prussians.
it's actually legal to be racist against the Austrians. If Johann got into some funny business, we'd have 499 other copies that could prove what the true transaction record was. And so in a lot of ways, the blockchain is not an innovation of Bitcoin. There are blockchains that predate Bitcoin. The novel innovation of Bitcoin is akin to the 1800s accountant convention. It's how that ledger is distributed publicly and how it keeps itself safe from bad actors in the system and from people who would seek to alter it. And that itself is novel. And that's the system that requires, in the case of Bitcoin, miners, who are the people who batch all the transactions together into blocks, and those blocks get added to the ledger. So the people who run nodes and mine, I'm going to get to what these mean, who ensure all of those systems are working.
I'm going to object to one part of your convention metaphor, because the innovation or the decentralization of blockchain would mean that you don't have to go to Vienna. You don't have to be invited by the convention. You don't have to wear a lanyard, right? Like, you don't have to have a 1800s degree in accounting. Like, you can just be a person who shows up really from your own home, and somehow they beam the whatever the ledger is into your ledger, if that makes sense. Like, if there's a change in it, then it shows up in your ledger. So that's a basic idea of it. Now, here's a question I think that when people are trying to get into blockchain that they generally think of that I want to ask you as well, Aaron, which is like, okay, so what's the big deal? You know, like that doesn't seem mind blowing in terms of technology, right? Like Donald Trump today said that we're going to go to Mars, like to have like something being like, oh, like it's akin to like you just emailing out 15 copies to your friends and you all just have it so that one of you can't change it, because you can go back and be like, oh, well, that like you changed that line, obviously, because when you sent it, it was this way. Like, you know, like what is so revolutionary about this?
Well, I think that's a reasonable question. And when when people's parents ask me this question of, isn't blockchain the real innovation at a party? I usually say, I don't think so. Like, I think the innovation is Bitcoin. I think that the killer product that's possible because of this kind of a system is decentralized stateless money. The idea that you can have money but have no central authority is itself a hugely provocative idea. I'm not sure that any other application of the blockchain that I've heard is like nearly as provocative. I'll give an example, and I don't mean to say that I don't think this is a good idea, but something like Civil, we talked to Maria Bustillos. They want to use the blockchain to make sure that articles never appear from disappear from the internet. And they have a scheme to use the Ethereum blockchain and use the notes field to put the articles in. So if a future Peter Thiel tyrant arises, they can't erase these articles. I think that's an admirable goal, but I don't think it's nearly as profound as removing a central authority around money. And I think that...
Okay, but I mean, there are tons of tech companies out there that use the internet, and not all of them are like Google, you know? So like there is different applications that can be done, and it doesn't have to be like overthrow the world economy.
No, to be fair, I think what Civil is doing is great. And I'm not sure that decentralizing money is a great idea, but I think it's a profound idea. And the system that was invented in Bitcoin, perfected, or probably not perfected either.
No.
Tried.
Exists.
In Bitcoin.
It exists. We can say it exists.
This central decentralized ledger allowed people to create a currency from thin air that had a game that worked. The game allows for its own integrity. The game that they set forth with miners and nodes and coins has not been cheated on yet. And so I think that in some ways the block... Well...
I mean, there are forks, there's the Ethereum rollback, you know, there's some other problems.
Oh, sorry, I was only talking about Bitcoin.
Okay.
I think that cryptocurrencies have had lots of problems.
The context that we need to give here, I think, is that, you know, this is still us at this party. I'm like, annoying dad who doesn't know that much about crypto, who doesn't want to, you know, deal with the morass of children opening presents. So I've started a conversation with you. Look, like I all I've heard about is like companies like IBM.
Yep.
Even I think Facebook saying that they want to get into blockchain technology, like Overstock starting an ICO, and the CEO saying like, "Oh, I really believe that blockchain is the disruptive technology of the future." So all of that is right now, basically what we have is that institutions and corporations are basically saying, "We don't necessarily know what to do with Bitcoin, but blockchain seems promising," right? And the problem with that is that there has not been a blockchain product that's created other than Bitcoin or maybe Ethereum that has been compelling or has had any use. And, you know, this technology has been around almost 10 years. So, I mean...
Yeah, I don't get that. That's what I enjoyed about the Adrian Jeffries article. I also don't understand what those people are talking about. Do you understand what they're talking about?
No. And, you know, I think that as you and I have gone through this space, you know, that the educational process has been interesting to me because I think it probably reflects the way that a lot of people think about tech or learned about tech in the 90s, which is that you start not knowing anything because it's all, you know, like you have no idea what you're not a coder, like you're not an engineer. Yep. And you start to learn, and everyone, by the way, is also like a snake oil salesman who is trying to sell you something, right? So it's very hard to figure out what's true. And so I think like as of 3 or 4 months ago, you and I were very interested in blockchain technology and what it was. And
yeah, we definitely thought like, hey, maybe we should just like buy all these stocks of companies that like say they're going to get involved in blockchain. That kind of seems like a good idea, right?
And in the terms of like a linear narrative, right, about like American industry, it does make sense that the internet would at some point be disrupted by something, you know, and that some new technology would come along and that places like Google would have some sort of competition from some insurrectionary tech that they didn't understand, right? Like this is the plot of Silicon Valley, the TV show, essentially. But man, it has been 9 years, right, with blockchain technology. The fact that nobody can explain it in two sentences, as we've been proving for the past like 15 minutes or 20 minutes, the fact that when you do explain it, you're just like, well, look, my credit card works fine, you know, or Microsoft Excel works fine. Like Microsoft Excel is actually a very good system. It's very hard for, I think, a layperson like you or me, or even one of these evangelists to really explain, okay, like they can explain what it is, they can use a wonderful metaphor, but when you ask them, okay, well, you know, like what industry is it supposed to be in? And then they always say something like, well, all industries. And you're like, that's not an answer.
Yeah, you know? But let me pause that briefly, because I actually want to say, I actually do believe in the idea of blockchain coming to influence these other industries. The part that I don't believe in is in the IBM blockchain or the Overstock.com blockchain or the Ripple blockchain. These are all blockchains that are controlled by a single entity. They're blockchains where one person controls the ledger, just like an American Express. So they're really just sort of cryptocurrency wrinkles on the same old, same old. And what I think is provocative or important is the idea that there's not a central authority. We talk about this in terms of Bitcoin, about messaging. You're always like, I think rightly, like, man, Bitcoin has like weird messaging. And that's because there's no central authority. There's no one behind it. There's Bitcoin Core, which is kind of behind some of the code level stuff, but there is no IBM in Bitcoin. And I think that that itself is a really like interesting, weird place to be that hasn't really been explored in capitalism yet. And an IBM blockchain, I don't think has those qualities. I don't really know what the qualities of an IBM blockchain are, other than maybe like needing less resources than other kinds of accounting. Like I could see like maybe there's some efficiency benefits to it.
But I mean, but Microsoft Excel is efficient, you know? American Express.
Not really if you're like running like millions of lines.
Compared to like the Bitcoin blockchain and making one transaction.
Yeah, okay, fair. I'll buy that.
I mean, like...
So the whole Bitcoin blockchain is about 145 gigabytes. So it's something that you could fit on a $59 jump drive that you get from CompUSA, if that's still in business.
Definitely not.
I think there's one more part of the blockchain that we haven't really talked about that I think is really important and is like very much what I'm thinking of when we call Bitcoin an elegant system, which is mining. That's probably the other thing that most people bring up at a party is, oh, why isn't it using too much electricity? So what are miners doing when they're burning all this activity? We know that they're solving these complex cryptographic problems, but what is the point of solving those cryptographic problems?
So they're adding blocks, right?
Yes.
Bitcoin,
which gets, are a block is just a bunch of transactions joined together.
Bitcoin gets released into the blockchain. The blockchain gets amended or lengthened, right? Through mining. And look, Adrian Jeffries, who wrote the article. You should read it. It's on The Verge. She's very skeptical about blockchain, but one thing that she does say is that in the 9 to 10 years that Bitcoin has been around, somehow the blockchain and the mining system has not been corrupted, like it hasn't failed yet. I mean, look, I don't think we need to explain mining. I understand what the blockchain is in theory. I understand what mining is in theory. You know, I will say that when they are laid bare in this sort of way and they're explained, they do not seem, in my opinion, other than sort of the idea of it or the philosophy of it, of a decentralized, deflationary currency, they don't seem really that special. You know, like they don't seem like technologies that are revolutionary in any sort of way. You know, like Elon Musk just like revealed like a subway that's the size of a parking space, you know? Like that's...
I disagree with this. All right. I disagree strongly.
So make a case.
Well, I think that maybe the blockchain by itself is not revolutionary, but the idea of a decentral store of information or value that is kept alive in perpetuity and kept with integrity in perpetuity and is not controlled by any sort of central server, any sort of central state, it presents like this new idea. It's almost like,
but we already have that. Like we had that with BitTorrent, you know. Like we had
no,
but
had BitTorrent. That's not what BitTorrent is.
We had
BitTorrent is just the method to distribute the information.
Sure, but we had a peer to peer network.
This is a type of information that's on BitTorrent.
We had
the ledger.
We had a peer to peer network that actually was revolutionary in many many ways that changed industries massively, like the movie industry, the music industry. It was decentralized, you know. It allowed people to share movies and music and books or whatever, you know, like back and forth from one another. Like how is this any different?
It's different because there is an item, the coin, that was created purely on this blockchain that's controlled on the blockchain. And there's no one behind it. There's not a company behind or anything.
But there's no company behind BitTorrent either.
But BitTorrent is just taking digital files that already exist elsewhere and could exist on any server and distributing them in a way that evades law enforcement. It's not creating something new.
Of course it is. It created BitTorrent. Like it created the whole network. That's what it created.
What does BitTorrent do that you can't do otherwise except that you can do it and not get caught?
What does Bitcoin do that you can't do otherwise so that you could do it and not get cut? It's the same thing.
Transfer money that's not controlled by a state.
I should say, I'm playing devil's
advocate. No, I misunderstood you. Yeah. I agree. Without its sidecar, I don't think blockchain is revolutionary. People are waiting for a revolutionary application of the blockchain. I think it's currency.
Okay, and so then what is the big deal? Why is everyone saying blockchain is the future? Why are companies like IBM, which obviously, you know, are legacy companies, like why are they investing in this thing?
Yeah, I think this is fascinating.
Why is a new mantra when you, and literally if you go to a party and somebody knows a little bit about Bitcoin, but not a lot, you know, like the smart guy thing to say, right? In the same way that it was like the smart guy thing to say like, well, Bernie Sanders can't win the primary, like that type of received knowledge, right? No, I'm not.
Yeah, you're going to get us in trouble.
No, but I mean like that level of like, oh, well, of course, you know, like this sort of, your like New York City.
No, that's a good comparison.
Like what they'll say is, you know, I don't like Bitcoin, but I heard blockchain is cool. Like, so what, where did this come from?
So I think it makes sense that all these companies, at least on like an R&D level, are looking into this. And I think that can explain some of the success of something like Ripple. It's a sanitized version of the blockchain. And so I think that people are not yet comfortable with the idea of made up money and Bitcoin. And they sort of want to come to the party, but they don't want to look stupid and they don't want to embrace a crazy idea. So they want to like be down with the future, but not upend the order too much. Like when people are saying like, oh, I don't think Bitcoin is really going to survive, but I'm sure someone will find a really important application of the blockchain. Or they say that, well, Bitcoin's like a very primitive attempt. I really don't get that. I feel like that's people who are like unwilling to make a big leap, which is fine to me. But if you're not willing to make the leap of Bitcoin, I don't know why you would make the leap of blockchain. Like, it's hard for me to understand how you can think that the blockchain is revolutionary, but be totally disinterested in Bitcoin. Is that something that you can understand?
No, not really. Because I mean, I don't, like I said, like, you know, the more you learn about blockchain, the less impressive it gets, in my opinion, at least, you know. Like, I don't understand why it's so revolutionary post BitTorrent, you know?
I don't get this BitTorrent thing. I don't get why like BitTorrent does not do any of the same things, really.
It's a decentralized way to send things from one person to the other, right?
It's not really totally decentralized because you're reading it from someone else's computer.
Well, neither is Bitcoin or the blockchain. I mean, it's a peer-to-peer thing, you know? It got around central servers.
But there's no one being incentivized to broadcast those files in a BitTorrent system. There's no mining.
A blockchain without Bitcoin, there's no incentive either.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's why I think that for the blockchain to work, you have to create a game of it. Like, I think of the blockchain like a bunch of game pieces in a box, and you need to create the rules to the game to make it work and to make it fun and to make it sustainable. I agree, BitTorrent is a game that worked. by putting a bunch of movies that people wanted onto BitTorrent, the BitTorrent network for those, you know, those torrents have stayed alive for years. It used piracy to keep itself alive. I guess I think this is like the first time that someone's created a game with the blockchain that has been compelling enough that it's got, you know, 10 years of life so far.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree with you in general that blockchain without the Bitcoin, it's almost like a catchphrase at this point. Like, it doesn't mean anything. Like, I don't really know what it means. Let's move on. Like, I think that, like, so we have failed to define big blockchain, I would say.
Sure.
Look, the one thing that I will say is that I think that we have failed to explain blockchain because there is a gap between the profundity of what you expect from what blockchain is, right? And this is something that Adrian in her piece alluded to, which is that when you hear it, it seems mysterious and magical and futuristic. And that when you learn about it, you say, well, that can't be it, you know, because it has to be more than that. And look, the idea of a decentralized ledger that keeps track of a lot of things that, you know, is not in the hands of a state, that's not a tiny thing, you know. But I think that we need to sort of come to the conclusion that that actually is all it is, you know. And if you feel like that's a huge idea,
yeah,
that a lot of applications can be built on top of that, then you should believe in blockchain without the Bitcoin. If you feel like maybe this is a sort of solutionism type of thing where perhaps there actually are usable solutions to all these things already, you know, what you are sort of going towards is something where like it might not actually just need blockchain technology for this. Like perhaps there's another workaround that isn't so cumbersome. Then you don't believe in blockchain technology without the Bitcoin. And I would just say that like that's kind of the long and short of it, you know?
Can I punch in there with one idea, which is you asked like, why is IBM, why are all these people like trying to get involved with the blockchain? And I think that there's a dominant idea in technology that if you want to survive, you need to emulate the upstart little guys, yeah, the guys who are trying to eat your lunch. And I would say, if anything, the blockchain is threatening to places like American Express. Like the blockchain is a threat, not an asset, in my opinion, to American Express. But it doesn't surprise me that they're like dabbling in it and doing research in it. That's what you would try to do if you were going to try to not have it take you down. So most of the companies that I have seen that say that they're doing experiments with the blockchain, be them the like Goldman Sachs of the world, the IBMs, the American Expresses, those are companies that should rightfully be afraid of the very first popular application of the blockchain, Bitcoin. And if anything, I would think that their real underlying motivation is competitive, and it's to make sure that their version of the blockchain beats the truly decentralized version, which could destroy them.
I think I'm actually more cynical than you are about it, which is I think that like if you think about it, like these companies, American Express, IBM, you know, the companies that have come out and been very bullish on blockchain, for example, Overstock, right? Like these aren't really industry leaders. I refuse to believe that a place like Google does not have like a lab that works on blockchain technology. They don't announce it, you know, they don't make ads.
Yeah, they're not like, we have a partnership with Ripple.
Yeah, exactly. So I think of companies like IBM, American Express, Overstock, that part of their messaging and their marketing right now is built around this idea of the blockchain. And that's part of the reason why there's so much confusion in the world about what it actually is. And it's sort of a marketing technique for their shareholders, I think, more than anything. Like, I was actually thinking about it, like, again, I'm not saying this to slander anyone at IBM, but, like, if we drove up to Poughkeepsie next week and we went to IBM and we went inside and we were like, can you please show me the blockchain labs? Like, what do you think we would see? I mean, do you think that we would actually see, like, you know, something that was futuristic with a bunch of, like, robot arms moving shit around? Or do you think that we might see, like, eight guys, you know, in front of their computers who are, you know, like nominally the blockchain technology group, but that maybe this is like a marketing ploy for them? Because, I mean, we've seen in the past what, you know, any association with blockchain or crypto can do for a company's share prices. I think that sort of the emphasis on that is a lot of it. It's just like, it's like messaging and marketing. Do you agree at all with that?
I do. I mean, it's not that I don't think they're doing it. I just think that if anyone had a really, really good idea, they wouldn't tell everyone about
it. Exactly.
So the fact that they're telling everyone about it makes me think that, you know, I think they're covering their bases. These companies try everything. Everyone is trying self-driving cars. Everyone's trying everything that they can try. What will be interesting to me going forward, and something I would want to talk about on this show, is whether these sort of faux chains ultimately make it hard for the true chains to survive. Like, I think we've seen investors are just as interested in buying Ripple, which is a centralized chain, as into the Bitcoin chain.
Yeah.
And if the only reason people really embrace decentralization is because they think it's a good investment, I'm not sure it will survive. I think we're shifting a little bit from the ideology of decentralization to just, is decentralization a good investment? And so I think that these people are right. If they can convince people that their chains are better in some way, even though they're centralized, they will nip this fairly profound idea in the bud.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I wouldn't say I totally agree with it, because but I agree with it in this sense, where if you think about it from an investment standpoint, right, like you have a new technology that is going to take over the world. You can either buy a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin with all of its attendant risks, or you can just put it in IBM and say, well, IBM's blockchain will probably be better than these crazy anarcho-capitalists who keep fighting with each other on Twitter. And in that way, from an investment standpoint, I do think that things will get diluted a little bit down the road if blockchain actually is promising. And it might not be IBM. It might literally be Google says, hey, by the way, we've been working on this too. We just didn't want to tell you guys because we didn't have to, you know? Some new company comes on that has amazing tech that grows with tons of VC funding and suddenly becomes a player in all of this. Like, all those things are open. And I think that from an investment standpoint, it does sort of push back against some of Bitcoin's dominance in the blockchain area.
Totally agree. Like, an example that I often think of is like Western Union. So we've seen like Bitcoin ending up in places like the Philippines because it's a very low cost remittance.
Or it was.
And it sometimes is. And that has interesting cultural implications, that a bunch of people have Bitcoin on their phones who are in the Philippines, and who knows where that could end up in 10 years. But if Western Union looks at that and says, hey, somehow people are using Bitcoin instead of Western Union, and they create the Western Union blockchain and the Western Union coin, and are basically able to offer the same service at the same price, what does that mean for the future of Bitcoin? Can Bitcoin maintain a competitive advantage if people clone all of the features of Bitcoin? And I think that remains to be seen.
Well, and that's where we get into, I think, a place where you and I diverge a bit, which is that I think to win that fight, you need to have better sort of PR than Bitcoin does. And PR is not, maybe not the right term, but you just need a better sort of, I guess, rallying cry that goes out to people. Like, you need to convince the woman who is a domestic servant, I think is the right word, in Hong Kong, who is from the Philippines, who wants to send money back to her family and does so every month through remittances or every Sunday, that it's better to use Bitcoin than Western Union for X reason. It doesn't matter what X reason is. You know, it could be that, hey, this might triple in value, whereas Western Union coin certainly won't. It could be like, hey, don't you hate the central banks that are keeping this global income inequity, which is why you're an OFW and you're working in this person's house in the first place. Like, you could do that messaging and it might be convincing, but you just need something. And I just don't see it right now, which is one of the reasons why, you know, I think there are like four main reasons why I'm super bearish on Bitcoin right now. But that really is one of them. I'm just like, well, I don't know what you tell those people.
I think that I'm going to take the other side of this one and say that maybe this is divide between us as a journalist and non-journalist.
You are a journalist, by the way. I always object to you saying you're not a journalist. Like, you interview people for a product.
Less objective journalist, a fake news journalist, is that I think the best PR is no PR. I feel like the fact that Bitcoin doesn't have to explain itself and doesn't have to answer to a board and doesn't have to show quarterly profits is one of its great strengths. The fact that it's like doing something that corporations usually do and there's no corporation is, I've never seen anything like that. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And look, there's no good answer because I think you're right in the sense that if Bitcoin has a centralized messaging, then that's bad. You know, like that's not good for Bitcoin as an idea or as a currency, you know?
Yeah.
I think that the best thing that we could hope for is that the messaging becomes a little more less toxic than it is right now. And that's about it. Like if it was null, then I would be like, great, you know, but it definitely is not null right now, which I think is part of the problem in terms of like sort of getting some of these people who hopped in on board between October and the first of this year back on board, you know?
Sure, sure. Before we get out of here, you got anything to say about this market?
No, it's about the same than when we talked about 4 days ago, right?
I feel like we got to go on strike here. Until the market goes up or down, we're not going to talk about the market.
Yeah.
So you heard it here. Just start buying or selling. Do something. Give us something to talk about. It's not investment advice. We don't talk about the market. We're just purely intellectuals considering the blockchain.
Okay. All right. I'll see you next week.
All right. Talk to you next week.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Wednesday, March 14th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $8,085.
So, do you understand the blockchain any better now? I don't, but we'll be staying on that story. Thanks for listening. This episode was edited by James Nicholson. Thanks, of course, to my co-host, Jay Kang. Thanks to our partner, Medium. You can find all of our episodes at medium.com/cointalk. You can send us an email, hi@cointalk.show. If you're interested in sponsoring, send us an email there and I can send you some rates. We want to get that going so that we can make some money so we can do more shows. You know what I'm saying? Okay, see you next week.